Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about an unusual film festival, which started in Brighton a few years ago, and the latest example of which is coming up later this month. Then, on a more serious note, we'll be finding out about blood cancer, which apparently is the third biggest cause of death from cancer in the UK, but is hardly known about by the general public. We'll also be talking to the current holder of the title Yachtsman of the Year, who in fact happens to be a woman. And finally, we'll be hearing about the biennial Sussex Poetry Competition, which is run by the Brighton and Hove Arts Council, and for which entries are now invited, the closing date being October the 20th. As usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started with the film festival. It's called the Women Over 50 Film Festival, or WOFF for short, W-O-F-F, and it's the brainchild of Nulla O'Sullivan. As I said before, the festival started in Brighton a few years ago, and since then it's gone from strength to strength. To tell me more about it, Nulla joins me in the studio. Welcome, Nulla. Am I right in calculating that this is the fifth year of the festival?
Yes, we're 5 years old now. Time has flown, Richard, hasn't it?
It has. I remember the very first one, which went by a different name, didn't it?
That's right. When we started, we were the Short, Hot, Fluff Film Festival. And then after the first year, we changed our name so that the festival said more on the tin what we do. When we were the Short, Hot, Flush Film Festival, I found myself saying, it's a festival for women over 50 every time I mentioned the name. So it made more sense to change our name, and we became Women Over 50 Film Festival, or WOFF for short.
Yes, the old name suggests it might be a festival of medical films, doesn't it?
We do always have a few medical things, bits and pieces in WOFF, but Women Over 50 Film Festival really tells you more about what the festival's really all about.
Yes, well, for the benefit of any listeners who haven't heard of it before, perhaps you could just give us a quick summary of what the festival is about.
Yeah, so we came up with a rule in the very first year in 2015, and it's the rule that we still live by, and every short that we screen at WOFF has to have a woman over 50 at the heart of it on screen, so really driving the action or being the documentary subject, or have a woman over 50 as the writer, producer or director. So actually what you end up with is a really inclusive, welcoming festival, because, Richard, you could make a film about me. I'm 57 and a quarter, and you're a man of whatever age. But because you made the film about an older woman, that would be welcome, and you'd be welcome at the festival too. And similarly, I could make a film about a 16-year-old boy, and it would be welcome into the festival. So as long as people are somehow interested in how older women are navigating the world, then they'd be totally welcome at WOFF.
That's great. And men are welcome as well, of course, from what you say.
Absolutely. So we're very interested in younger people coming to the festival, particularly for younger women who increasingly find a lot of pressure in how they look, and they seem to be quite fearful of ageing. And one of the things we want to do at WOFF is provide really positive, encouraging role models for younger women. But also, as you say, younger men and older men, they're totally welcome too, because most men have an older woman in their life, it be it a grandma or their favourite teacher or a neighbour. So most of us are somehow connected to an older woman, so everybody would want to come and see films by and about us, I would think.
As they used to say, behind every great man there's a woman.
Exactly. And behind every great woman there's a man, sometimes.
A long way behind. As we said, the festival's in its fifth year, and it's grown from being quite a small event when it first started, hasn't it?
That's right. That very first year in 2015, we were in the Exeter Street Hall, and we showed 27 films over an afternoon to 80 people, and we had one panel event. And that panel event has stayed with us all the way through. it's now a legendary all-female panel event. So we have another one of them this year. But now in our fifth year, we're in Depot in Lewis, which is a beautiful three-screen cinema. And this year we are screening two feature films, 51 short films. We have six workshops, a lecture by a visiting academic from the University of Indiana, and our all-famous all-female panel event. So we've really grown, but the heart of who we are remains the same.
And the festival now runs over 3 days, doesn't it?
That's right, yes. We start on Friday, the 20th of September, and that day is free activities. And that's particularly, I think, for many of your listeners, for elder people, so we're saying people over 60, also people who maybe find it economically a bit difficult to pay to go to the cinema or to a festival. So these activities on Friday are free. We'll be showing shorts and we might have a workshop. This is an invitation only event. So if any of your listeners, if you'd like to come to our free Friday, you have to email us so you can book your place. And you should email info@wof.co.uk. So that's info, I-N-F-O, at woff, W-O-F-F-F, .co.uk. And just tell us that you'd like to come to the free activities at Depot on Friday the 20th of September, and we'll sort you out. Then our main festival, we kick off on Friday evening with a feature film with Emma Thompson. It's a great comedy called Late Night. And she's an older woman juggling ambition, love, ageism, sexism, and the menopause. And she's quite a harsh, not terribly likeable character, which I think is really interesting. I'm interested in seeing older women in all their complexity. So she does a really fantastic job in Late Night. And then on Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of September, we have the festival proper, where we'll be showing all those fantastic short films. We'll have visiting filmmakers and all kinds of good things going on. And then we close the festival with an awards ceremony and another feature film called Woman at War, which is a fantastic Icelandic comedy slash drama slash thriller about a middle-aged woman who is a choir conductor by day, and by night she's an echo warrior. And it's a fantastic Icelandic drama. So lots of great jumpers and that dry Nordic sense of humour.
Yeah, sounds great. Going back to the main part of the programme, how do you actually define a short film?
Oh, that's an interesting question. And I think if you ask anybody, you'll get a different answer. For me, I liken it to a short story. So a novel is a piece of art that stands by itself, and so does a short story. For me, a short film has to have that same kind of punch. You know, there's no wasted words, no wasted pages in a short story. You just got to get in, get to the point, and get out. And that's what I think a short film should be doing. What the length of a short film is, I mean, really, that's how long is a piece of string. Some festivals go up to 40 minutes for a short. For us at WOF, we've got different lengths for different types of films. So the longest film we accept is 25 minutes for a documentary. But usually, for a lot of our films, they're somewhere between that kind of 8 to 10 minute. That's a kind of sweet spot, I think, for a lot of short film festivals.
And it means you can get plenty of films in the 3 days, of course.
Exactly, yeah. We have, over the festival, we'll have eight programmes of short films, and they're from countries that we've never had submissions from before, Richard. We've got films from Russia and China and Greece, and we had submissions from Namibia. So really, truly international shorts. And there'll be eight programmes. They'll have about six or seven shorts in each programme, and a mixture of genres too. So we have drama, including comedy, and experimental, animation and documentary. So really lovely wide variety in our programme. The workshops this year, again, You know, we've really built this up over the years, and we've got some really fantastic workshops for audience members and for filmmakers. We've got one I think just everybody would enjoy on how to make a film on your iPhone, because we've all got these smartphones in our pockets and they've got cameras. Another workshop that we've got this year that I think is very interesting is by a woman called Ita O'Brien, and she's an intimacy coordinator. So that's when they have intimate or lovemaking scenes in a film, she is the person who directs that. And her philosophy is, in the same way that fights are choreographed, so love scenes should be choreographed. And she's going to share some hints and tips with filmmakers in one of our workshops this year. Her job as an intimacy coordinator is to act as the on the actor's behalf, to see that they're not exploited.
Now, the festival itself, as we said, runs from the 20th to the 22nd of September. But after that, you've got another show that you're taking around the country, haven't you?
That's right, yeah. So every year we get, this year, for example, we got around 200 submissions, and we whittle them down as a selection team to the 50 that we'll show in the festival. And then from our independent juries and our Audience Choice Award, we end up with about 25 films that are given awards. So they're our top films. So they've been through quite a few processes to get to be one of our best films. And then we take a tour of some of those films around the UK. So we've been to places like Tyree in the Outer Hebrides. We've been to Towan and Aberystwyth in West Wales. Been to Belfast, down to Folkestone, you know, properly all around the country. And of course, we do quite a bit of a tour right here in the southeast. So we go to places like Fabrica in Brighton and the Old Market in Hove, Towner Gallery in Eastbourne. So, you know, we do get around. So look out for the Best of the Fest from WAFF.
Do you know the date when you're going to be at Fabrica?
We've got a couple of dates coming up in the southeast soon. We're at Depple in Lewis on the 12th of September with our Best of the Fest programme. And we're going to be in Fabrica with that same programme the first week in November. We don't have the exact date pinned down yet. But if you want to check back on our website near the time, you'll be able to get the full details there. And our website address is woff.co.uk. And on social media, which is, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, our handle there is WO50FF.
The programme you're doing at the Depot, presumably that's based on last year's festival, is it?
Yes, that's right. From the end of the one festival, we have a whole year when we take the Best of the Fest round. So that will actually run until the end of December, even though we'll have 2019's festival in September. But when 2020 comes round, that's when we start the Best of the Fest for the next year.
So the same applies to the showing at Fabrica. It'll be based on last year's festival rather than this year's.
That's right.
And looking to the future, have you plans for anything to make the festival any bigger and better?
I'm not a fan per se that bigger is better. The festival has kind of grown organically over the last few years. Some years it's a little bit bigger, sometimes a little bit smaller. It feels right to me at the moment as a kind of three-day festival. It's still pretty much me in the driving seat, and there's only so much of me. So unless Magical Money Tree gets shaken, you know, so that we could hire more people, so that we could do more things, I think I'm kind of at my full capacity with the three-day festival and then a tour around the country.
It obviously keeps you very occupied throughout the year.
It surely does.
Okay, Nulla, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
I was talking to Nulla O'Sullivan about this year's Women Over 50 Film Festival, which takes place from the 20th to the 22nd of September at the Depot in Lewes. In case you haven't come across the Depot, it's right next door to Lewes Station, and it was originally the distribution depot for Harvey's Brewery, hence the name. In fact, there's still a wrought iron sign over the entrance saying Harvey's Brewery. But it's now a three-screen cinema and restaurant. You can find out more details about the festival from their website, which is at woff.co.uk. And it's three Fs because it stands for Women Over 50 Film Festival. So that's woff.co.uk. They're also on Facebook, and the address there is woff. And on Twitter, it's a similar address, woff. And now on to what is, unfortunately, a rather more serious subject. It's the subject of cancer, which, of course, is very relevant to us older people. Most of us think that we know about the most common types of cancer, such as breast cancer and cervical cancer, lung cancer and prostate cancer. But there are many others, and one of the less well-known ones is actually very common, namely blood cancer. For the last few years, September has been designated Blood Cancer Awareness Month by the organisation Bloodwise, which is a charity that exists to raise awareness of blood cancer. To find out more, Chris English spoke on the phone to Phil Reynolds, and he began by asking him why it's so important to raise awareness of this type of cancer.
Well, we know that blood cancer is the third biggest cause of cancer death in the UK. And this Blood Cancer Awareness Month, we've released research that shows around 40% of people don't recognise blood cancer symptoms or have dismissed symptoms that could have been blood cancer. Things like bruising, bleeding, drenching night sweats. And that's really serious because, as I say, this is a very common cause of death. Outcomes are much better if people are diagnosed at an earlier stage. So it's really important that people have a good understanding common blood cancer symptoms and go to their GP and get them checked out.
Just that. How can people, we mustn't worry people, obviously, but how can they get checked out?
Well, a key focus of Bloodwise's work this month is to build our awareness guide, so people can visit the Bloodwise website and have a look at that. But really, it's about, I think, recognising changes in your body and knowing what's normal for you. We all have aches and pains, and most of the time these things won't be anything to worry about. But when symptoms are persistent, when things are unusual, and when things are, when these things won't go away, then I think it's important that people just feel confident to go and talk to their GP and to say, actually, you know, I have had this fatigue and I've tried sleeping and it hasn't got better, or actually I'm waking up with drenching night sweats. This isn't normal for me. Can you just, you know, check me over and reassure me that there's nothing to worry about?
I mean, what will a GP do? Is it a simple blood test?
Well, the diagnostic tests vary for different types of blood cancer, but around two-thirds of types of blood cancer can be diagnosed with the simple blood test. And for some types, they'll need to refer you on for further scans and things. But you know, this is not an invasive thing. It's not anything to worry about. A conversation with your GP is the first step. And you know, just asking them to rule out blood cancer if this is something that people are worried about. And also visiting the blood cancer site and checking out our symptoms guide.
And, of course, GPs are notoriously busy. Some people will wait several days for an appointment. So are we in danger of overloading the GP even more?
No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, GPs want to hear from us. You know, their job is to see people and to reassure them and to look after the patients that they are on their books. So I think, you know, they would be pleased to have people saying, look, you know, I'm not sure this is anything to worry about, but I just want to come in and reassure myself and to have reassurance from you that this isn't anything to worry about. Because actually, in most cases, this can be dealt with very simply. We're only talking about the very small minority of cases where people would go on to have blood cancer.
Blood Cancer Awareness Month, what's that all about?
Well, it's something that we do every year. As you said at the top of our conversation, you know, this is a type of cancer that people, in too many cases, have too low an awareness of. We know that it's the third biggest cause of cancer death. So Bloodwise is doing our part by telling the stories of people affected and by producing our symptoms guide and trying to raise awareness of these signs and symptoms to reduce some of the awful potential side effects or potentially save lives as well.
I mean, just that. A lot of people haven't necessarily heard of blood cancer. They've heard of the other forms of cancer all too often. But is it increasing or is it staying about the same level?
Well, I mean, cancer is a disease of older people. So, you know, it's great that we're all living longer as a society, but that means that all types of cancer will become more common, including blood cancer. We know that around 40,000 people are diagnosed a year. And thanks to advances in treatment, there are around 240,000 people living with blood cancer. So, you know, actually, we have a good story to tell about blood cancer itself. But it's important that, as I say, in certain cases, it can be a killer. It's the third biggest cause of cancer death. So it's important that people do get those symptoms, bruising, bleeding, sweats and shivers, checked out if they have any concerns.
You mentioned older people. That's our target audience with this programme. Are they more susceptible to blood cancer?
Well, your lifetime risk of getting blood cancer is about 1 in 19. So, you know, I mean, as I said, cancer is a disease of older people. But I would say, you know, if anybody has any of these symptoms and they don't feel normal for them, or that they don't go away after a few days, then I think it's important to have that conversation with your GP and to check out the Bloodwise website, because, you know, as I say, it's very likely that it isn't anything to worry about. But in those small numbers of cases where it could be, you know, reducing those delays is really important.
Phil, thanks very much for joining us. And before you go, those contact details and that website again.
It's bloodwise.org.uk, but if you just put Bloodwise into Google, you'll find it.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed, and thanks for joining us on At Home this morning.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris English was speaking to Phil Reynolds of Bloodwise on the subject of blood cancer. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is at bloodwise.org.uk. That's Bloodwise, spelt Bloodwise, .org.uk. And if you do think you might have any of the symptoms that Phil mentioned, it wouldn't do any harm to go and see your GP. Well, now, regular listeners to At Home This Morning will know that one of Chris English's passions is sailing. So he is very pleased recently when he was able to get an interview with the current holder of the title Yachtsman of the Year. As it happens this year, it's a woman, Nikki Henderson. She's just coming towards the end of her period of tenure of that award, and she'll have to hand the trophy over to somebody else. Chris began by asking her whether she feels strange about being described as Yachtsman of the Year.
No, I try not to think about it. I think we all know what it means, and that's the main thing. I know that there's a lot of chat about yachtsman, waiter, waitress, that kind of thing, but it signifies something really significant, and that's, you know, a big sailing achievement, and it's an honour to have it. And I guess it even means more that a woman's won the Yachtsman of the Year.
And talking about the award generally, that's coming up fairly soon. So are you going to go along to the presentation?
Yes, I am. I am going to the presentation. Looking forward to seeing who wins it. Hand it over.
Right, so you'll be up there on stage passing it to the new recipient.
Yeah, wow, I don't know who it is, but that could be quite an honour. There are some pretty big names in that trophy.
Some really big names in the world of boating, not just sailing, but boating.
Yeah, and it's a nice award. There are some, you know, there are some superstars, but there are also some people, some, you know, many haven't heard of, so... it's a total. I had to keep pinching myself when I was looking at the award at home, and it's been an honour to have it, and I'm looking forward to passing it over.
Talking about boating generally, we're on the eve of Southampton Boat Show, which is now the UK's only boat show following the lapse of the London show.
Mm-hmm.
How important is a thing like a boat show to the competitive sailor like yourself?
For a competitive sailor like myself, the boat show provides an opportunity to advertise what you're up to, and to look, you know, put your name out there for sponsorship. It's a high profile event, and it gathers all of the the big brands together, and so it is quite useful event for a professional sailor. The other thing I think is that the event invites sponsorship, and it's an opportunity to send a message to the boating world. And I think this year they're sending a message about accessibility, which is, you know, something close to my heart, you know, trying to get as many people into sailing and boating as we possibly can, and show them that it doesn't have to be a sport for the elite. It's a sport for everyone.
It's important, isn't it, this business about it's not just for the elite, it's not just for the millionaires, it's for anybody and everybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are some, getting involved a little bit in Borrow a Boat, which is a scheme that's started, but these are real things that actually turn the sport, as you say, from a sport for millionaires to a sport for everyone. Because it's all well and good saying it's a sport for everyone, but you actually have to create opportunity so that you can go sailing without having, you know, a couple of grand for a day. So, yeah, hopefully this kind of thing will become more commonplace.
And what do you know what's in store at Southampton? Is there anything special lined up?
The only thing I know about, apart from the awards, is the following Friday, I'm actually speaking at lunchtime that day, and it's an experiences day, so there's opportunities to go sailing and to get out on the water and to have a go yourself.
I mean, I've been boating since I was 4 or 5. How did you get into it?
You know, a little bit through family and friends. But really, I mean, I really significantly got into boating, sailing and so on when I was 18. I taught myself, I suppose. I taught myself the steps that I took it from a very lighthearted hobby into a profession. So you don't have to have grown up sailing. You don't have to have that picture of you in a life jacket when you were, you know, 2 months old. You don't have to be in that kind of family to become a sailor or a boatsman, I suppose.
And what's important? What drives you?
What drives me in the sport? I think ultimately what drives me is that I want to use sailing and yachting and boating to send a bigger message. And I think that it's an incredible sport for individuals. I think it's an amazing self-development environment. It's an amazing environment to build teams and practice teamwork, leadership. But I also think on a bigger scale, it's an incredible platform to promote a good cause, charity, and, you know, you take the sport around the world as well. But on top of that, I think that the idea of sailing, I think it's been touched on a little bit, but to send a message about sustainability and the environment, I think it's a very good way to do that, because I think unlike many other sort of sports or modes of transport, it can be quite eco-friendly. So you're standing at a point of setting an example when you start to promote sustainability.
Going back to the Yachtsman of the Year, you won it for skippering one of the leading yachts in the Clipper race, round the world race, which embarks this weekend as we speak. Do you wish you were there?
It's funny. It's an emotional time. I think, you know, I was 23 when I got the job, and I'm 26 now. And I look back and think it was an incredible journey, and I really gained so much from it. And it's really good fun. So I sort of miss the excitement. I feel very nostalgic about the experience, but I can't say I wish I was there. I wish all the new 11 skippers all the best of luck.
Chris English was talking to Nicky Henderson, who's this year's holder of the title Yachtsman of the Year. And by the way, the Southampton Boat Show runs from the 13th to the 22nd of this month. Now, in a few weeks' time, on October the 20th to be precise, entries will be closing for the Sussex Poetry Competition run by the Brighton and Hove Arts Council. The competition runs every 2 years. And to tell me more about it, I'm joined in the studio by Kevin Rance. Welcome, Kevin. Can you start by telling me how long the competition's been running for?
This will be the fourth competition, and it's a biennial every 2 years. So the competition's now been running for 8 years, since it started.
And presumably it's gone very well over the years?
It has indeed, yes. Last time out in 2017, we had the highest number of entries we'd ever had, so which is promising. But we're hoping to beat that this time. We're doing a lot more advertising, and these days, of course, we have social media to assist us.
So who can enter this competition?
The poetry competition is known as the Sussex Poetry Competition. So anyone with links to Sussex, those born here, who reside here, study here, or even those who have lived here for some time and may have moved away. We did have a few entries from around the country last time from people who had lived here for a number of years and then moved away.
There are two competitions, aren't there?
There are indeed. Anyone can enter the main competition, but there is a monetary entry fee for that. And then there is the student competition, which is free entry. There's a cash prize of £150. And all winners, whether it be from the main competition or the student competition, will be invited to our festival in November to read on stage at the Old Market alongside the recognised established poets like Holly McNish and Cecilia Knapp.
So entry for the student competition is free, but there's an entry fee for the main competition, is there?
There is. For the first poem, it's £6, and we've kept the price the same for the last two competitions. For any subsequent poem, and it doesn't matter how many further poems are entered, it's £4 per poem.
So, as you say, you can enter as many poems as you like.
You can indeed. And it's on any topic. We don't specify any theme in our competition, anything at all that you like.
Is there a limit to the length of the poems?
There is. It's 40 lines, and it must be in English, I'm afraid. Our judge speaks English, and we'll need to read the poems in English.
And presumably not too many rude words in it.
Well, we don't actually put any restrictions on, and certainly in the last competition, there were certainly some, I would call, sensitive words in some of the poems, but generally people avoid them.
I suppose the sort of thing, if it would be all right on television, it'll be all right with you.
Oh, indeed.
How do people enter?
They can enter online through our website, which is www.bh-arts.org.uk. Or if there are those who are not computer literate, then we do have a PO box. We have hard copy entry forms that are available in a lot of the pubs and cafes around the Sussex area. But the PO box number is PO Box 5505 Brighton BN50 8PY.
And presumably that's on the entry form. So.
That is indeed, yes.
What's the closing date for entries?
The closing date is midnight on October the 20th. We can't accept anything after then, and we did have entries submitted in the early hours of the following day last time, and we had to refund the money. Anyone who enters after midnight on the 20th will have their money refunded, and they won't be taking part in the competition. We have to be fair.
When does the judging take place?
The judging will take place soon after the 20th. I will be presenting our judge, Dr. Jess Moriarty, who is head of creative writing at Brighton University, with all the poems. They are all presented anonymously. There is a reference number on them so that we can reference back to the author. But Jess will only see the poem itself and a number. She will read through them, and I believe she has a sifting process to work out which ones are the better ones, and then she goes through until she dwindles it down to the last 10 to 20, and then she finally has to make a decision on the winning seven in the main competition. And there are three prizes in the student competition.
So there's just the one judge then?
There is only just the one judge, yes.
Right. Do you take over the copyright in the poems once you've awarded prizes to them?
Oh, no, the copyright remains with the authors, but we will be publishing the winning poems, plus perhaps a few selected close runners, which will be on our website after the close of the festival.
So presumably the poets are free to exploit the poems elsewhere as they see fit?
They are indeed, unless they're one of our winners and it's published, because most poetry competitions do stipulate that it hasn't been published elsewhere. So if they've won in our competition and it goes on our website, that will preclude them from entering other competitions, I understand.
But it wouldn't preclude them from reading the poem elsewhere or publishing it elsewhere?
Not indeed, no.
You were talking about prizes earlier on. What sort of prizes are going to be awarded?
In the main competition, the first prize is £1,000, which again we've held. We increased it from £500 last time out in 2017, and we've held it at £1,000 this time. Second prize is £250, and then we have further prizes of a writing course at the Brighton University and some £25 prizes. And then in the student competition, a first prize is £150 with two £25 prizes. And as I said before, all winners will be invited to read on stage to hopefully an audience of 300 at the Old Market in November.
What an opportunity. I presume the prize money isn't covered by the entry fees, so do you have sponsors?
We do. We've been very lucky this time. We have four main sponsors: Coapt, the property company, Bone Idol from St James's Street, Brighton Girls School, who've just revamped and renamed, and Mike Griffiths Associates, an archaeological company.
Now, you were talking about reading on stage at the Old Market. This is part of your poetry festival, presumably, is it?
It is. The poetry festival's on Sunday, 24th of November this year, and it starts at 3 o'clock until 7 o'clock. The doors will open at 2 o'clock, and we'll have some music beforehand in Tom's Bar. And we have Hammer and Tongue, the local Brighton poetry group, and they do what's known as a slam, which is quite fun. About 10 poets reading their work, performing it on stage, and Mike Parker, who runs Hammer and Tongue in Brighton, has groups of the audience judging each performance and scoring, and he has a particular system to come out to the winner at the end of the slam. We then, following that, we have Usama Minhas, who won the National Hammer and Tongue Slam 2 years ago, Cecilia Knapp, and our headliner, Holly McNish, who's making quite a name of herself these days.
Is the festival actually tied up with the competition? In other words, does the festival only happen on the years when the competition's at?
Yes, the festival always follows the competition now. I must explain that this is only the second time we've had a festival. When the competition started 8 years ago, it was purely a competition in its own right. And my predecessor, Jason, and I had a conversation 2 years ago and decided that we would try and promote the competition by having a festival and recognising the winners by having them read alongside the recognised poets. This follows on from my own experience many years ago, where there was a Poetry Olympics which used to be held at the new Vic Theatre in London, where many recognised poets would attend. Fran Landsman, I remember, early punk poets like John Cooper Clarke, Linton Kwesi Johnson, Adrian Henry, Heathcote Williams, were all on at the Poetry Olympics over, I believe, a two-day period. And we felt that we would try and replicate that experience, because I certainly enjoyed it very much in my youth, down in Brighton, where we felt there was a gap for poetry. And poetry does seem to be becoming more and more popular these days. Most people can quote from a poem, even a few lines, and certainly I can remember poems I was introduced to in my youth, and that's going back to the 70s, I have to admit. And I believe many other people are in the same boat, that they can always remember a few lines of a poem, whereas they might not be able to remember much of a popular book. And poetry certainly is becoming more popular.
How do people get tickets for this?
Tickets can be bought at the Old Market itself, and they're £15 full price, unless you have concessions or a student, in which case there's a reduced price of £10. But we will also be offering tickets at a reduced price to our members at £12, and also to those who take part in our poetry competition, where you can buy tickets at £12 rather than the £15. And those can be purchased online at our website at the link I've mentioned before.
And if people don't have internet access,
then they can buy tickets again through the PO Box 5505, Brighton.
I was talking to Kevin Rance about the Brighton and Hove Arts Council's poetry competition, which, to remind you, closes on October the 20th. If you'd like more details, you can get them from the Arts Council's website, which is at www.bh-arts.org.uk. And you can send your poems in by email using the address that you can find on that website. If you don't have a computer, but you'd still like to take part in the competition, entry forms are available to be picked up free in various pubs around the city. And you can send your entries in to P.O. Box 5505, Brighton, BN508PY. That's P.O. Box 5505, Brighton, BN508PY. The winners will be announced at the Arts Council's Poetry Festival, which is on the 24th of November at the Old Market in Hove, and tickets are available from the Old Market. Well, that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, which will be presented by Chris English, and I'll be back in a month's time. So until then, from me and from everybody at Grey Matters Productions who make this programme, it's goodbye for now and take care.